Welcome, welcome, welcome everyone. Welcome back to the Prepared Mindset Podcast. This is your first time in joining us. Happy to have you guys along. We appreciate you all taking the time out of your day to hang out and see what we got going on this weekend. It's a little bit of a throwback discussion, honestly, between taking my brother out to the range this weekend and just popping on like an old Fieldcraft podcast episode and getting like a little like old school inspiration from when Mike Glover was, I don't know, maybe a little bit less cringe than people may perceive him to be today. Not to take anything from the man or his service, but between that and also had a conversation today on social media, and it was actually a relatively pleasant one considering the tenor and the tone of it when compared to a lot of the other discussions that I've had with people, and I'm sure some of you guys have had as well when people bring up the idea of owning firearms and how it gets overly politicized. Specifically some of the media driven, I think, narrative behind it. So, long story short, I had somebody post about, "Hey Canada, like look at what your government took for you, or took from you rather. You can't own firearms, blah, blah, blah." And somebody posted, or he said you can't own semi-automatic firearms. And then somebody commented and came back and said, "Why, can you explain to me why civilians need semi-automatic firearms?" So I took it upon myself as a relatively well-read individual to say, "Well, semi-automatic firearms are pretty common, and I've been in common ownership since, their creation, basically. A lot of other ones are banned and outlawed right now, things like, machine guns, because I want to make sure that people misunderstand and they hear, semi-auto, they think that it's a machine gun and it's actually full auto, right? Most of us know that, but had a really good discussion about it, back and forth anyways. And, then it, of course, it degrades to, well, it's all about mental health and keeping people safe. And, this should just be a world free of fear and anxiety, which is just, let's just all admit that, the Looney Tune land of, fear-free and anxiety-free existence, just, it's not a thing in 2025. For better or for worse, the world has kind of gone to hell in a handbasket. A lot of people will point at everything that we endured the last 4 years, 5 years, whatever, with the pandemic and say that was it. I would respectfully disagree and say that we were well on our way before that. But all of this to kind of get to the point of today's conversation, which is getting into the ideas, the concepts, the setup, the use cases right behind civilian carbines. And here's the thing, like I talked about this, we're on episode 290 something at this point. And I know this was one of the first like 10 episodes I think I ever did was talking about carbines, and it's been about 5 years. So obviously I've learned, a whole hell of a lot. And, there's been a whole lot of change out there in the industry and in the market behind what is perceived as normal, as a good idea. What's available to us is very, very different. Applications, use cases, all that stuff. Like it's a little bit different, now I will say than what it was when I was getting started. And certainly, any of us who look at what we were doing 5 years ago in terms of our own progressions on shooting, our personal development, our personal growth, let alone, right, our personal finances and what that allowed us to access in terms of, gear, in terms of an ammo and a training budget. Some of us 5 years ago, I know for a fact, listening to this, some of us 5 years ago weren't even legally able to own a firearm. Some of you guys listening are in your early 20s. You're barely old enough to buy a goddamn beer. So in relative comparison here, things are very, very different. 5 years is a short amount of time for a lot of people. It's a very long time for a lot of folks. And when you talk about your growth and development as an individual, as a shooter, as a prepared citizen, yeah, 5 years, that's a little chunk there. So we're going to get into it. A lot of thoughts, a lot of, I think, important distinction that can be made when we're talking about, the platform that is most commonly going to be reached for in the event that something goes wrong. And in addition to that, right, we'll talk about a lot of different stuff, but yeah, I think for home defense, a lot of people recommend the carbine over other tools, which we'll get into. Excuse me. But we're going to get into it and we're going to cut it up. We'll talk about all of that stuff. But before I get on over to the meat of this week's episode, if you will, the meat potatoes, the body of work here, as you might refer to it. Again, I want to thank you guys for your support. And if you're looking for additional ways to check out what we're doing here at Prepared Mindset, You guys, we have a YouTube channel. Actually, today it was exciting. We broke into 1,400 subscribers. We actually officially crossed that threshold, 1,401 the last time I looked. So it may be up at this point in time. I don't know. But you can find us on YouTube. If you want to head over to the channel and check out what we have there, you can listen to the podcast there. You can also see the long form videos. That's a constant work in progress with what the quality and the content and the ideas and things are like. So keep an eye on that. If you guys can help us out and subscribe that, hit the notification bell there. Also, whatever service and platform you are listening on, make sure you guys are subscribed and get notifications. So when we drop new episodes, like this past weekend where I did an impromptu sit rep talking about Trump and his executive order to get the attorney general, right, to research and look into basically all of the Second Amendment rights and legislation that kind of infringes on those rights, so they can make a prioritized list of how to address those. And, you know, he was very distinct in how he wrote it. It was very particular in how it was called out in the different sections of that executive order. I thought it was well written and very succinct, very to the point. Calls out some good stuff. Go listen to that one if you want more information on that. But make sure you have those notifications turned on, because it will let you know when we have new stuff dropping. It may be on schedule. It may be outside of our standard schedule. So, but in addition to that, we want to talk about support. We have some outstanding companies that sponsor us here at Prepared Mindset. So we're a sponsored podcast. We work with entities within our community that are doing great, great things. Whether they're a company that makes fantastic products or a company that provides an outstanding service to you guys, we were customers of all of these places before we started working with them, and feel 110% confident bringing that forward to all of you and sharing experiences. So want to make sure that we share them, want to make sure that we trumpet their success and their support of this podcast, starting first with Custom Night Vision. You guys, the website is customnightvision.com. And I was a customer at Custom before I ever started working with them. I bought my first laser there, and they've been great partners over the last couple of years here as we've been working together. And they're your one-stop shop, you guys, for all things night vision related. So if you're buying your very first unit, if you're upgrading, if you're doing a housing swap, if you're doing a tube swap, I know some people, you know, you kind of build as you go. So maybe you bought a used set of, I don't know, RNVGs with some green Omni, you know, 5 or Omni 6 tubes in it, and you want better, you want to jump up, but you really like the housing and the durability. That's great. You can reach out to the guys. You can go through customnightvision.com. They have a chat function built into the lower right-hand corner of the website. You can reach out. You can talk to Ben or Kevin or Trevor. And hey, you know what? I really want to get into some white phosphor. What do my options look like? Whether that's some Elbit XLSH or YH tubes with, you know, good FOM rating or whatever your particular metric of choice is. Maybe you want to get into some L3 filmless tubes. You really want to just swing for the fences. Maybe when you got the unit originally, you didn't have so much financial freedom. Now things are different and you want to upgrade. Or you're going from a PVS-4 and you want to have them match you, your Elbit tube, to get you into something like an MH1 from Lloyd Innovations. The guys at Custom are there that take great, great care of you and help you through that process. Their mission, their goal, is to bring the most transparent buying experience to you, their consumer base, as is possible. Again, you can head over to customnightvision.com. You can check out all the lights they have from companies like Surefire. They have lasers from B.E. Myers and Steiner and more, right? You know, they have optics and obviously tons of night vision. Whether you're looking to buy components, whether you're looking to build your own custom unit with special glass and, you know, all kinds of stuff going on over there, you guys. It's customnightvision.com. Head over to the website today and check it out for yourself and buy the superpower. It's literally the superpower you can buy, you guys. Up next is American Defense Manufacturing. Their website is admfg.com. And man, they were kind enough to send me one of their 13.9-inch Criterion Core barreled uppers. And I put that together with a mil-spec lower, took that out to the range just this past weekend. My brother figured out some ammo work with that, and man, it's outstanding. Even for a shooter I don't want to say I'm a bad shooter, but you know, it's a little bit of a gritty mil-spec trigger pull there. It makes me look so much better because of how well built that upper receiver group is, with the Radian Raptor charging handle, with the ADM bolt carrier group. Great tolerances, great spec, awesome quality control. Again, it's admfg.com. Head over to the website, check out all of the Mod 2 line of their upper receivers, whether it's their 10.5 or 13.9 or 16-inch, whatever flavor suits you guys best, and of course their whole line of optic mounts and accessories. Next, thank you to Orion Training Group, you guys. Man, what a talented bunch of instructors that are passionate about bringing their information and their experience to all of you civilians looking to be better prepared and more capable out there in the world. The website is OrionTrainingGroup.com. You can head to the website. You can check out the biographies, the information behind the entire cadre. So whether that's Jared or Jason or Blake or Alex or Joe, any of those guys, Lindsay, if you're looking into comms, she offers great communications courses done via Zoom call for a really affordable rate, if I do say so myself. And you can attend those on a Saturday morning, right? Get your coffee, sit down. I think the one I was in, actually, somebody from Hawaii had logged on. It was like 6 a.m. their time, and they were able to sit in on the call. We were all able to learn about squad comms and ask Lindsay a bunch of questions on radio setup and usage, and a whole lot even beyond just radio usage in that particular class. I've been fortunate to take three different CQB courses with the guys over at Orion. Fantastic dudes, and they'll be back up here in Michigan in mid-May for another one of their classes. So head on over to OrionTrainingGroup.com. And check out the calendar for yourself. And finally, here we get to our friends at 100concepts.com. You guys, 100 Concepts is out there killing the game, man. Their motto is do good, be dangerous, live free, and they are living free. I'll say that much. They are now carrying and selling Surefire weapon lights, which if you purchase through them, you get a free light cap. And they're also now carrying and selling the EOTech EXPS3 optic, which is one of my personal favorites. And if you do purchase through them, you get one of their free anti-reflective devices. You guys, 100 Concepts listens to you guys. They listen to the customer base. That's why they've taken things like their light caps and ruggedized them and turned them into scope caps. And you have the pro cap feature that meshes together the scope cap idea with the anti-reflective device. And they offer even more solutions, right? Things that help you with camouflage in the field, solutions to make you more effective, whether that's the chem light kit that they have or their helmet scrim, their pack scrim, the Samaritan med pouch. They come, you can get an adapter to turn it into a fanny pack and a whole lot more, guys. Again, the website is 100concepts.com. Head over there and grab some new gear for yourself today and support a fantastic bunch of Americans. So thank you to all of our partners out here in the industry. Again, we were customers of every one of them before ever working with them. And it's super cool to be able to say that you've turned a positive consumer relationship into a partnership here, and then be able to bring that back to all of you guys who in a lot of instances are looking for those solutions, are looking for safe recommendations, right? I mean, it's 2025. Most currency and financial transactions are digital, and fraud's everywhere. People are always trying to screw you over, get your money, not get you what you're promised, to not deliver on what they said they would. And we're here to, just tell you guys, those are some great companies doing some awesome work out there, providing excellent customer service. I've experienced that with every one of those, and definitely more than happy to put my name next to every single one of them. Now, like I was saying, this week we are talking about the civilian carbine. And I think for most of us here, at least in the continental United States, when we think about the civilian carbine, everybody goes straight towards the AR-15 platform. And I mean, for good reason. I know it was developed by Stoner in, I want to say it was like the 50s. I'm not a great historian. There's other like YouTube channels and guys out there who are certainly much better at this than I would be, from a historical aspect. They could tell you when this was developed, why it was developed. But I digress. It's a rifle platform that's widely acknowledged and accepted in many, many pockets of the world now. It's not just the United States military and the United States citizens that have adopted the AR as their preferred platform. But certainly, I think when you look at the number of Americans that own these firearms, it's officially the American fighting rifle, chambered in 5.56, or 223. And it's a great platform. Now, that's not to say as a civilian, you can't also own something that's chambered in a different caliber, right? So maybe an AR-10, still AR platform, still the same basic concept and idea just executed for different purposes in the 308 caliber. And now we're seeing people experiment with a lot of other stuff too, you know, with 6mm ARC and 6.5 Creedmoor and some of these other, I don't want to say Gucci rounds, but certainly when you talk about like your standard warfighting rounds, I think 5.56 and 308 are your gold standards. Not to take anything away from, you know, some of the other ones that are out there now that can be certainly just as capable and just as effective. Things like the 300 Blackout, which a lot of people prefer for home defense, for truck guns, things like that. But it really comes down to what you want to do with it. And to be honest with you, if you stick with 5.56, 300 Blackout, man, a lot of those parts are really interchangeable. 300 Blackouts basically just comes down to like the barrel. I don't own one, so I could be off on one or two details there, but it's pretty interchangeable. You just don't want to obviously put a 300 Blackout through your 5.56 gun where it's, you know, too big a round and too small a barrel, and then you blow up your upper, and then you got to, you know, when you're done crying, you have to go ahead and fix that and replace that. But in terms of the carbine and kind of tying it back to the conversation I mentioned at the very beginning of this episode, where you have these people that say, why do you need that? Why do you need a semi-automatic rifle? It's a, you know, and this individual actually in that discussion described semi-automatic firearms in general, because we didn't get into handguns, we didn't get into rifles or carbines, right? But just in general, defined semi-automatic firearms as quote unquote weapons of mass destruction. And I think that that's a grossly misapplied term when we're talking about firearms in general. I think that's a media talking point. I think that's a smear tactic used by those who would seek to disarm us. But as the modern Minuteman, as the prepared civilian, the carbine is the most effective weapon platform that we have, or readily have, right, at our disposal for a couple of reasons. One, and it doesn't have to be an AR, but we're just going to talk about the AR because it is the most common platform. They are everywhere. So if you were to jump back to the Revolutionary War and things like that, or the War of was it 1812, and then you look at you know, other conflicts, you could go to a home across the countryside, and every home had a rifle. It was just something that you had because you hunted with it. You could protect your home with it, yes, and then you could, of course, step out and fight a war with it. And the Second Amendment being something that guarantees our right as American citizens to keep and bear arms for the specific use of combating tyranny, you want to have that rifle. Another something to think about with this is that the carbine's actually, I would say, the easiest platform to teach somebody how to shoot. Now, we're not talking about winning marksmanship competitions here, but what we are talking about is if I had to pick somebody up, you know, off the street and give them a rifle and teach them how to be effective with it, it is so much easier to teach that person how to work the AR platform rifle with a 16 or 18 inch barrel. It's not overly heavy until you start loading it down with you know, accessories, I guess, right? The manual of arms is extremely easy, and it's set up to make you successful. Honestly, when you look at some stuff like AKs and other platforms and how you have to kind of like rock and lock with your, magazine insertion versus an AR, which is basically just shove the damn magazine in the gun. And then as you do that, your thumb comes straight up and hits the bolt release. There's really not a lot to it. And given the relatively light recoil impulse, especially in like a 16 or 18 inch, like a full size M16, things like that, it's very, very, I would almost say even enjoyable, pleasurable, right, for somebody to shoot, which is then going to, it's basically not going to push somebody away from ever wanting to pick that rifle up. Whereas if you give them something like a 308 bolt gun or a 6.5 Creedmoor bolt gun, like a hunting rifle, right, which does not have any kind of reciprocating mass to it, you just get that whole kick, that whole impact into your shoulder. Not necessarily the most enjoyable, and certainly not with a 12 gauge slug gun or pump shotgun, auto shotgun, whatever, which is what a lot of people think that's what Americans need. They think that that's the appropriate, and usually they're people that don't own firearms or do very little with them. They will tell you, matter-of-factly, that all you need to defend your home is a pump shotgun or a double-barrel shotgun, break action, whatever. You don't need a semi-automatic or a revolver or any of that stuff. Maybe you do. Maybe that's where they put the limitations on it, but they'll tell you that, having only ever fired one round at a time at a deer or something, and they're really, really convinced that that's what you, you know, that's what you need. And it's just not the case. When we look at the modern use cases of the AR platform and the M4 carbine in the military, right? This is what's being issued to law enforcement now. We don't see a whole lot of law enforcement agencies across the country being issued shotguns. Now, there are instances where they let it be the, you know, trooper or officer's choice if they want to have a slug gun or if they want to have a rifle. Personally, I know several people in law enforcement who made that mistake of choosing the shotgun one time. It took one bad interaction. I mean, the one I'm thinking of specifically with a buddy who used to be a state trooper here, he had one interaction with a barricaded gunman where they had a very, very long driveway. And the only thing to take cover behind on that driveway was some shrubs. And he had a shotgun with buckshot in it. I believe his exact words after that was, "I will never, ever fucking carry a shotgun again after that, because I knew that from the distance I was at, that that shotgun would have been worthless." And this guy had a rifle. So we do see basically a widespread adoption on the law enforcement side of the AR platform rifle, whether it's an SBR or a full 16-inch patrol rifle, something like that. It's there, meaning that if something were to happen, and I'm thinking, I don't want to go full like conspiracy theorist, but a lot of people go straight to zombie apocalypse, and I think both equally ridiculous. But if you look at the movies and, oh, hey, you can just, you know, pull a weapon out of a police car. Well, okay, cool. So that just goes back to support the idea that the platform is super common, meaning that parts and ammo and magazines are going to be very, very easy to find. Additionally, the M4 has been the fighting rifle of the U.S. military for close to 75 years. And while I know they're working on adopting a new round and a different platform with SIG and everything for the military, which hasn't been going well, it still technically is on the AR platform. The parts aren't as interchangeable as a true AR, but it is the AR platform design. It's just modified and made to fit in SIG's own kind of, like, I don't want to say bastardized image, but it's not really an AR. I was having this conversation with Josh and John the other day because I couldn't remember which caliber it was, and they basically let me know, no, you can't just take that new upper and put it on an AR lower like you could with like a 416 or some of the other, you know, options that are out there. It is uniquely its own, which is unfortunate, but it is what it is and you can't really do anything about it. But, you know, I digress. So when you're talking about a carbine, there's a lot of different places that people take it. And I think that we have the worst conversations first. You know what I mean? We focus on the least important shit up front, and it's always the most important crap that gets addressed last. And what I'm specifically talking about is the training to be effective with this. Now, a moment ago, I talked about how easy it is for somebody to pick up this rifle, learn the manual of arms, right? Like, you're right-handed. Let's just say you're like, I think it's like 83% of the population or whatever, 87%. I don't know what the fuck the number is. And you're right-handed. And that's what the rifle is built for. Standard mil-spec rifle is built for right-handed shooters. Cool. You pick up the rifle, your right thumb wraps around that pistol grip, and your thumb is indexing on that safety lever. It's exactly where it needs to be. You have your left hand out on the barrel, nice little C-clamp grip, whatever, and basically you just have to shoulder the firearm, take aim with your eyeball, and then squeeze the trigger. When you go to reload, you insert that magazine. As you insert the magazine, your thumb naturally gets up to where that bolt release button is. You press that, sends the bolt home. You're now reloaded, ready to go. So the manual of arms is extremely easy. The charging handle that's located basically completely over the top of your pistol grip, you know, like the buffer tube in between, but you know what I'm talking about. It's really simple to access. You just use your index finger and you pull back. You could use your index and middle finger if you want to be super old school about it, which some people are. I don't prefer that method, but my point to all of that is that it's super easy to work out. It's not like an AK where you have to, you know, lean with it, rock with it, knock out the old magazine. It doesn't drop free. You have to knock it out on your own, and then you have to index and rock it in and lock it into place. And then instead of having a bolt release, you have to, you know, kind of reach under or over the top with your support hand to rack that charging handle. And, you know, I don't find the location of the safety, which is really just a lever to block that bolt. I don't find the position of the safety to be particularly ergonomically efficient or biomechanically efficient, I guess. And I'm sure there's some AK guys that'll say that and they'll get really upset. And honestly, if you are really into AKs, you know, the commie block rifles, more power to you. I would just say whatever rifle platform, whatever carbine platform you are looking into owning, investing in yourself with, right? Just follow it through, right? Pick it up and go get some goddamn training with it. Learn how to be effective. There are so many Americans that own this rifle and yet so few who actually take it upon themselves to go out and get good quality training from a company that will teach you how to be effective at when to shoot and when not to shoot and how to be accurate and effective with that platform. We happen to partner with one. If you guys are looking for a great recommendation, go check out the Cadre at Orion Training Group. I mean, semi-shameless plug. Those guys are fantastic. They're good teachers, and the Cadre has a wide breadth of experience. Now, back to the carbine. When we're talking about a carbine, there's a lot of things we can do to make it easier to shoot, make it more effective. This is why you see in the military, you know, starting at the top, right, with special operations, and even on down now into the infantry for the large part of, you know, most branches, is you have optics, right? So yes, the M16 with its carry handle has your sight built in the carry handle and a front sight post that also serves as your gas block, which is an essential part of helping to regulate that semi-automatic function that we spoke about earlier. And that's how it was designed. That's how they used it through much of the Vietnam War, and then certainly in through like Desert Storm and things, unless you were in a unit like Delta. So if you guys have seen the movie Black Hawk Down, or if you've read the books, if you've seen the many, many presentations by the survivors of that battle of Mogadishu, you know that Delta was running like Aimpoint 2000s, and then you had some like red dots. I think it was like the original iteration of the Aimpoint red dots on their... the M1s and the M4s, I think is what it was. Sorry, M14, not the M1. You know, we've seen it evolve from there. But now, as a civilian, access to optics has only gotten better and easier. Access to you know, suitable mounts was what I was looking for. Suitable mounting solutions, regardless of what height you want, and how you want to mount it, there's tons of options out there. If you look at what the military's been doing with it, the ACOG is an optic that was developed for the fighting carbine years and years and years ago, and it's still hanging around here. You see them floating all over the secondhand market because, I mean, you could basically run these things over with a truck, and it's still going to work. And it gives you, yes, I mean, there's detractors to it. It is limited. The technology is somewhat limited, given that, you know, at the time of development, we really didn't have a lot of the advancements that we do now. And keep in mind also that from like 94 to 2004, we had a firearms ban in the United States that limited access by civilians to many, many firearms, carbines certainly included on that list. And while it doesn't limit the optics, it does certainly limit how many companies, businesses, right, would be incentivized to develop optics and better solutions for something that only really the government could get. Right. So the companies that own those contracts were basically the only ones that would really care about that. And it just, the less people you have in the conversation, the less innovation that you're going to get, if that makes sense. So now we've obviously seen that expire about 20 years ago. And since then, you know, the optics game has flourished. You can add a lot of different things to your rifle. And ACOG is just one of many options out there. And by all means, while it's super durable, it's very outdated. The eye box, which is just where your eyeball has to be positioned relative to the eyepiece of the optic itself, it doesn't have a very forgiving eye box. You have to be right up on that rifle, which... it means if you don't know how to control recoil, that can hit you in the eye pretty easily. While funny to watch, not so great to feel. And you have to teach people that kind of thing with those optics. It's also the reason why a lot of people moved away from the ACOG because it was limited. It was only a 4X magnification. And today, by most standards, we're looking at 6X, 8X, 10 times, right? We're just looking at way more magnification. And there are equally durable options out there at a smaller scale and a lot of times more affordable. Things like the Aimpoint T2. And then from there, you saw companies like Holosun take what Aimpoint was able to do and revolutionize it into a smaller, lighter package that is, in a lot of regards, I don't want to quote, just as good. Right? It's quote unquote just as good. Because for civilian applications, you don't probably need something that can go roll down a mountain in Afghanistan and then be picked back up and go back to work. if you want to build your fighting rifle in that image, then I implore you to do so. I think that having something like an Aimpoint T2 or a Comp M5 or an Aimpoint Pro or even the Duty RDS, which I'm not a big fan of, but to have something that's that rugged and that durable, it's not a bad thing, you guys. Like, a more durable tool is always going to be better for you. That's kind of, though, like being a garage mechanic where you just work on your own vehicles occasionally as things break, and then insisting you need to spend $17,000 on Snap-on boxes and tools. Sometimes it's just overkill. If you believe that you need it or you just want it and you can afford it, then by all means, go ahead, knock yourself out. It's a free country. God bless America. Now, to say that you won't have a good experience and good performance out of something different than that, like, I mean, EOTech isn't exactly cheaper, but it's another alternative option out there. You have companies like SIG that are now producing their own line of red dot sights. You have companies like Lead and Steel out of Ohio that are producing, their LP1 rifle dot that brings another option to the market. And I know they discontinued it, but the Leupold Combat Optic, the LCO, that was a really popular one. You still see those popping up all over the internet. I wonder if it'll make a comeback. I know I saw the news that Nick Keitlicka, who was their head of marketing there for the last several years, is now heading their red dot development. So who knows? Maybe there'll be a new iteration of the Leupold LCO. Certainly, if you guys have watched any like the Forward Observation Group's videos on YouTube and stuff, you've seen some of those guys run it. But so red dot optics, it kind of depends on what you're trying to do with the carbine. If you want to reach out to distance, you can use a red dot paired with a magnifier. So basically a magnification device which can flip to the side, or now they have mounts that flip straight downward. They roll inward and stay in line with your bore axis. And you can get up to a 3X or a 5X. I think there might even be a company doing a 6X magnifier. It just depends. It's not going to be as good as a scope, but you do have those options. Or you can build a larger rifle, so longer barrel usually, maybe in a larger caliber, like we were talking about 308 a moment ago, with some glass, with some magnification. One of the things actually that Mike was talking about when I was going back and listening to this old Fieldcraft episode, right, was how in Special Operations they were issued their gas gun. So I don't know if it was like an SR-25 or what it, you know, what it might have been. And then they had their like 10.3 Mark 18 Mod Zeros and stuff. And that's certainly something you could do. I think a lot of people should take a closer look at the methodology and the concept and the idea of, hey, I don't want to build one rifle that does everything okay. Because the perfect rifle does not exist. The perfect fighting carbine for the American civilian, as a general concept, like, hey, we're going to make one rifle in one configuration and give it to every civilian, and it's going to be perfect for everyone's needs and use cases. That's not a thing, guys. It really isn't. Some people live in very, very urban areas. So if you have an apartment in downtown Detroit or something like that, Chicago wouldn't allow it because they suck. But some of these very, very densely populated cities where you're living basically on top of each other, you're on the 17th floor with your apartment or whatever, you're going to probably want something with a shorter barrel to do CQB. Honestly, you know, and that's a training question and a tactics question that we could get into separately, but certainly would probably in a lot of instances, at least from what I know about the deep parts of downtown Detroit, there's not a whole lot of open spaces you're going to be shooting down. There's a lot of obstructions of sight. A lot of those roads curve. They are not necessarily built as a grid. Actually, the city's built like a wheel and spoke type concept. So your longest shots are probably going to be around 1 to 150 yards, which is perfectly within the capability of a, like a 10.3 or 11.5 inch, you know, SBR, something like a Mark 18 would do well for you. Conversely, if you're somebody who lives out in the countryside, right? So I have friends that live out in the open, they have neighbors that do livestock, and they themselves keep like chickens and stuff like that. You're probably better served by something with a longer barrel that's going to perform better for you. Something like a 14.5 or a 16 inch, it could be in 5.56, it could be in 308. Either one could be effective, it just depends on what you're trying to do, but then your optic setup is also going to be different. And like I mentioned a moment ago with Mike, they carried both of them. And he was telling stories about how he'd have to, you know, like hoof it up some stairs with his Mark 18, clearing a structure to get to a point where he could then deploy his larger weapon system, because his actual job was to be a sniper. Now, as American civilians, I think cross-training and doing something to that extent, I think that's a wonderful idea. I just think that in execution, knowing the... I guess knowing the propensity that we as Americans have towards an overall lack of fitness and physical capability, I think we kind of set ourselves up for a bit of failure in that regard. So when you start looking at, we start looking at weight. So you're carrying, let's just like, if we say we're carrying a plate carrier, right? And I know we're kind of having a fundamental discussion here for somebody who may not know a lot of this, but we're past that. You know, we can kind of loop in some additional information here. So we look at our plate carrier, right? And you're carrying, let's say, 4 loaded AR mags plus your plates. So your radio, your extra kit and gear. So maybe your plate carrier weighs something around 20 pounds. Let's just call it 20 pounds, right? Plus if you have a belt on. So then your ammo and your handgun, whatever else is on your belt, so that's another 7 pounds. So we're at 27 pounds, okay, rough number. So then additionally, you're going to carry, broken down in a backpack, this longer gas gun. We'll say it's a gas gun for reaching out. So that's, so let's just say it's a 13.9, because I have one of those now, a 13.9-inch gun. And it's got a magnified optic on it. So probably, let's say a 1 to 6 or a 1 to 8 could be... There's a ton of great options out there in that range right now, from the folks over at Swamp Fox to Vortex with their Viper, which is what I have currently, the EOTech Voodoo. You can get, you know, the NX-8 from Night Force, or the ATACR from Night Force are very popular options. Bushnell, all kinds of stuff, right? And then because you want to run that fully magnified, then you're adding a piggybacked red dot to that. So whether that's like an RMR, a T2, or the Vortex Crossfire 2, which is... It's like their interpretation of what the T2 is, or a 509T, right? One of these enclosed red dot optics that's built for a pistol, but it gets put on a rifle. Okay, so there's your optic setup. And then you roll with night vision, so you need to have a laser out at the end of your gun. So that's more weight. Granted, not a ton, but it is more weight. And you should have a white light on your rifle, so you got a light out there, and then it's a rifle meant to be, you know, shot from a seated position or, you know, a proned out position. So you got a 9-inch Harris bipod on the end of it. So that's even more weight. And on top of that, you got a suppressor, maybe like a Surefire RC2 or Dead Air Sandman S or the Sandman X that just came out, right? That's a pretty heavy gun. That's going to be upwards of, you know, at least, depending on what kind of handguard you have, it's going to be somewhere probably between 12 and 18 pounds, just depending on how big the glass is, how long your barrel length is, you know, stuff like that. It's going to be a heavy gun, right? And then, so we were at 27. Now with your backpack, that's, let's say we call it just 15. So that's 42 pounds right there. Okay, and then you got the shorter rifle that you're carrying with you. So maybe it's a Mark 18 or something very close to the Mark 18, where you know maybe you have a quad rail, so it's already gonna be a little bit heavier. It's not terrible, but it's a little bit heavier. And then all the same rules apply. So now we have maybe you know you have an optic riser because like me, you like a more heads up shooting position. So there's you know maybe a pound there for the riser, and then you have your EOTech and magnifier. So that's, you know, another 2 pounds for that, your laser, your suppressor, your vertical foregrip, the ammo, right? So, I mean, you guys see what I'm saying is that this is getting very heavy. We're probably pushing upwards, you're easily to 65 pounds with everything. And that's not even addressing what else you're carrying with you. So food and water. If you have supplies you need to carry with you to make an OP, right? You need to conceal yourself with some kind of scrim. You're going to need to carry extra batteries because anybody who's ever gone out and done anything, you know that the batteries go out at the least opportune time. So whether that's extra batteries for your lights or and your optics and your laser, so some, you know, 123s or some double A's, depending on what, you know, what it is that you're running, or perhaps a charged 18650, now that that's kind of a standard with some of the turbo lights and lights like the Cloud Defensive Rain 3, and then your battery for your radio. And depending on what radio that you use, those could be some really light little guys for your Baofeng UV5R, or those could be some very big batteries for, you know, a Prick 152 if you have, for whatever reason, or however you ended up getting one of those batteries are not the lightest in the world, and you should be carrying at least two of everything. I mean, it starts to add up. So, and water adds up, right? Medical adds up, all that stuff. So you're pretty closely, you know, approaching the 85 pound mark with all of your gear and everything. That's not including like a helmet and stuff like that. And it, you know, how many people could comfortably carry around an extra 80 pounds all day, every day, let alone going up and down stairs in austere conditions? Do you guys see what I'm kind of saying with this? So it's a cool concept if you're something that you're physically fit and physically able and capable to do. And I think that the civilian carbine really should be the one that you pick up for your most immediate action. You can have a second rifle. Most of us have many. That's the beautiful part about being an American citizen, is your right to keep and bear arms. You know, so if you want to build out a general purpose rifle, which I know some people get upset, we start taking the carbine conversation, and then you start adding all kinds of different acronyms. Oh, it's a SPR or a GPR or a CQBR, and you know, people don't want to have to learn the nomenclature and the labels. I can't do anything about that. I can't help you there, boss. If you're upset by that, you may be in the wrong hobby or the wrong field of interest, because I don't make those rules, but I do try to do my best to keep up with all of those. So a GPR being a general purpose rifle, and an SPR being a special purpose receiver. So that's a whole different ball of wax, but basically something that would be like a 16 or 18 inch barrel 5.56 gun with at least 9x magnification that you could reach out and touch somebody with. And, you know, none of this so far, we talked about weight, capability, getting training. So yes, the training and the skill set that you're going to use with that fighting carbine, that 10.5 to 11.5 inch, maybe it's even a 12.5, right? Some people really like the 12.5 as a dual rifle. The skill set for CQB distance fighting is going to be different than the skill set for that 16 or 18 inch SPR. Now, that's at the fundamentals, it's not different. To be very, very clear, fundamentally, it's not different. Shooting is shooting. However, you apply different skills for different tasks with those different weapon platforms, right? Just like you don't use a hammer to try and take a nut off, you use a ratchet or a wrench, right? Hopefully you guys understand what I'm saying there. The fundamentals of shooting, that does not change. Shooting is shooting. However, if you're trying to go for, you know, speed and angles and room clearing, obviously something shorter with a non-magnified optic that's easy to be picked up as soon as you bring it up to your eye line, that's going to do way better for you than a scope. It will, especially if you're like running a 3-9. 3x magnification doesn't sound like a lot, but when you're indoors and you're trying to utilize it quickly, it does. It is a lot. So those are things that need to be considered. And you know, and there's options out there now. There's so many options out there for us as civilians is how we want to choose to build these rifles. It's not just buying surplus anymore. Oh, hey, I'm going to get a surplus Colt upper, and that way I know it's built for battle. That's not a thing anymore. Okay. And that's not to take anything away from Colt, but Colt's owned by CZ now. And all reports I've heard of the new Colt stuff coming out is that there's a lot of quality control issues. There's a lot of issues with it, but luckily we have access to other companies. We have access to other brands, and there's so much information available out on the internet on how to build rifles, how to do these things successfully, how to properly break in a barrel. You can just build one now. You know, you get, you know, I think Josh was telling about this. He bought like a blemmed BCM upper receiver and then put a Ballistic Advantage barrel in it, which is a great barrel, rather affordable, albeit as well. And yeah, I mean, he had to work on it with a heat gun a little bit to get it to made up. But like, you know, that thing ain't having any fucking problems. There ain't gonna be no issues with the lockup on that barrel if you got to use a heat gun to get it on. Which is good. That's what you want out of something that you plan on beating on and taking potentially into battle. And then you can get handguards, right? I mean, there's a ton out there. Geisley, BCM, Arrow, just to, you know, name a few. I mean, there's even more. Midwest Industries, all that good stuff. And then your lower receivers, yes, you can go straight mil-spec. You can go ambidextrous. It just depends on kind of what you need and how Gucci you really want to get with it. And then, you know, obviously your optics, I think that I think a lot of people buy whatever the military's been using because not because of, here's the thing, military grade typically just means whatever was cheapest at mass scale that isn't just going to break. It doesn't mean what I think a lot of people interpret it to mean, which is that this stuff is bomb-proof, it's never going to fail, you're never going to have issues with it, it's never going to lose zero. But I will say there's been a number of people, this is not me taking a shot at the military or the National Guard or the armed services in any way, in any shape or in any form. But if you can give some of those idiots these optics and they can't break them, you know you've got something good on your hands. Because the story that pops out in my mind is when Lindsay Du was talking about how she used to take people's radios away from them because she would catch them like using them to drive in tent spikes and stuff because they didn't know where their hammer was. So instead of finding their hammer, they just used their radio. And I've heard, you know, dumb stories about, I had a buddy tell me last night, the aiming laser he was issued. So he was issued a PEC 15, which is a combination VIS laser, IR illuminator unit. Usually guys run it out at the end of their gun. And it's so that you can have a active aiming method when you're looking through night vision. Because if you don't have NODs, you can't see the IR spectrum of light. So you can't see the aiming laser. And told me how he basically had his fall off the end of his rifle and just picked it back up, put it back on, and tied it back down, and just kept going. And, like, yeah, I mean, cool, but you would have to, or you should anyways, re-zero or at the very least reconfirm your zero, like make sure that it's right on with your optic and stuff. I don't know if you necessarily have to take it to the range if you're just reconfirming. I know I saw a video of tactical riflemen talking about how they had a spot when he was deployed they would stand at outside of their hooch and, you know, hold the laser on the wall, and they knew that that distance was roughly about 50 yards, and they would just make sure that the laser was, you know, zeroed to that distance at that point, and then they knew what their holds were going on, you know, afterwards. And that's fine, as long as you know that, you know how to use it and everything. But the military is notorious for abusing some optics and lights and things like that. I've heard not really horror stories, I guess, more just stories, very funny ones about how battered and abused and beaten some of the issued M4s and things are. And they still run, they still work. And that's, I think, that's a compliment to the design and the, you know, how well thought out it was, the tolerances. The platform can get extremely dirty before it needs to be cleaned. It's very, very resilient in that way. Now, everything has its limitations and its failure point, but you do see some of these weapon platforms out there that aren't the AR, and they do have problems with running and reliability. Platforms like the SCAR, you know, and there is somebody out there for everything, right? The SCAR is a tremendous platform for certain applications. Certainly if it's a SCAR heavy chambered in 308, you can do a lot with that. I don't know that I would ever recommend that as a fighting rifle to somebody who is a civilian, and it's not because the platform itself isn't necessarily good, it's because the cost of maintenance is going to be so ridiculously high, it wouldn't make sense in most cases to have that as your main training rifle. I've heard stories about, you know, when you suppress the SCAR, because of how the system works, how violent it can be, it will actually, under suppression, because you increase the amount of gas coming backwards in the system, right? There is a nut at the back of the rifle that will actually shear clean off from the extra gas in the system if you don't take the steps ahead of time to change that out and put in a stronger component, which in the military, it doesn't matter. I don't want to say it doesn't matter, but in the military, you take it to your armorer, who's probably going to call you a fucking retard, and then they're just going to, you know, they're going to swap that part out. They're going to get you a new pin or bolt or whatever it is. And you're going to go about your life. And while that's being worked on, they're just going to issue you a different weapon, whether it's another SCAR or an AR platform rifle. As a civilian, you don't have that luxury. And also, because it's not a very common platform, it is going to be very difficult to source parts and very expensive to get them. So when you look at some of these options that guys have out there, they like the very Gucci AK platform rifles, which are very nice, I'm sure, and run very well. But if something does break, then you have issues with it. And if you're running something other than 7.62, like, you know, 5.45 or something like that, yeah, it's going to be more difficult to come across that ammunition in large quantities. And if you can, again, it's going to be very expensive. I think the expense factor is something when you're talking about how you're building out your own fighting carbine, at least as a prepared citizen, as a civilian, right? You have to look at that. You just have to. Now, you could sit there and you can argue the ballistic performance, of the 5.7 round, 5.45, 7.62, 300 blackout, all that stuff. It's just, you have to keep your budget in mind. Nobody has an infinite amount of money to spend on this stuff. And if you're spending all of your money on ammo and parts because the weapon system sucks, then you're not able to spend that money on things like med and other, considerations that come into this whole, civilian, this whole private preparedness conversation that ultimately this all builds into. The carbine, like we said here, it's absolutely the most effective solution for home defense because it can be handed to anybody and picked up and ready to go. One of the things we haven't really talked about much other than just to kind of shit on the SCAR was suppression. That's another part of why I think the AR platform works so well is because many of the top shelf options or even middle shelf options on the market, and the bottom shelf ones too, with a couple changes made to the gas and buffer system, can accept suppressors pretty well and run pretty reliably with the suppressor. And I think if it's a fighting carbine for the modern civilian, like, guys, tax stamp turnarounds right now are like a month or less. I had buddies, they had a 2-week turnaround on their tax stamp. It's crazy to me that a couple of years ago, I want to say it was like 2018, maybe 2019, definitely pre-COVID, I had a friend who purchased, they had a buy one, get one deal, I think, on a suppressor. If you bought it, you got a free 22 can with it. And yes, the can was free. You still had to pay for the tax stamp, I'm relatively certain. It took him 14 months for approval. Over a year. And that's because it was before e-form filing was a thing. But now, fast forward to 2025, e-forms are the standard. I don't know many places or FFLs, right, that are doing any kind of paper filing because your customer satisfaction is going to be just so much lower. I remember when I got mine, I waited just north of 6 months to get my Dead Air Sandman S. And it was great. It's fantastic. I think that for the signature reduction and the sound suppression that a silencer is able to provide for your carbine, there's not a whole lot of reason why you shouldn't have one in 2025. There really isn't, especially when you consider from a price standpoint we were just speaking about, you can get some pretty reliable cans from like Yankee Hill and Otter Creek. I mean, yes, you can get nicer ones. You can get the Huxworks, you can get the Surefires and everything. Do I think that they're entirely worth it? For some things, yes. For most things, I would say if you had to come down to it, make a decision because you were on a tight budget, no, I don't think you're losing anything going with one can over another. But my point is the same, is that it's very accessible and very affordable, much, much more so than it's ever been in the past, especially if, like we were talking about earlier, where you're carrying two rifle platforms with you. So if I were to want to do that, I have a Dead Air Sandman S, which is chambered in, it's a 30 cal can, meaning it can take anything up to 308, including 5.56. So then maybe you either run a 30 cal can on your long gun, and then on your SBR, you can run a second suppressor, maybe something that's more optimized for, pushing gas out the front of it, like the Huxworks or the RC3 from Surefire. But then when you look at the can for the long gun, maybe it's a Sandman L, so the longer can, 30 caliber, it's going to be much more focused, instead of on gas mitigation, it's going to be much more focused on signature and sound reduction, which is, yes, if you're in a stationary position deploying a large, heavy weapon in a higher caliber, you want concealment's going to be a major consideration for you. And that signature reduction piece should not and cannot be ignored with any kind of fighting weapon, but especially with a carbine. And I know for a while there, a lot of guys were buying the Surefire Warden and putting it on the end of their rifle because it used that same QD collar system, which you can now buy, by the way. This is one of the coolest things, in my opinion, that came out of SHOT Show this year, is the QD collar system that Surefire has is now available to the general public. And if you have a, I forget what the thread, I knew what it was at the time, I think it's 1 3/8 by 24 or something like that. I'd have to look at it again. Don't quote me on that. Don't laugh. Well, I mean, you can laugh at me, it's fine. I don't give a shit, but definitely don't quote me on it. you can actually swap that out. So if you really like the Surefire muzzle devices, maybe you had a Warden, which is just a blast forwarding device, you can swap that out into your Dead Air Sandman or whatever other can, and then you have that universal collar system that works on all of your muzzle devices. That's not to say that the Warden and other devices like that, the Blast Shield from Griffin, those muzzle devices that are for blast mitigation, doesn't mean that they're not useful. It just means that for the most part, if you had to choose between one or the other, most people would choose the suppressor. Now, if you're somebody who commutes long distances for your day job, so 40 plus minutes one way, yeah, and you have a truck gun because you're concerned about what may happen. And a lot of people did that. A lot of people went that route during the election, not knowing if we were going to see these mass protests in the middle of freeways like we saw in some major cities just a few years ago, right? Where people were halting traffic. And then as soon as they did halt that traffic, they were breaking windows. They were pulling people out of vehicles. They were beating people for no good reason other than the fact that they were just there and they were a target. So a lot of people had that concern for a truck gun. Well, then that's where one of those blast mitigation devices, it's a non-NFA item, which we can debate the legalities of the NFA at a later date, and hopefully we do, right? But having those devices is great for blowing pieces of glass and dust and dirt and debris and things out and away from the shooter. So if you're shooting from inside your vehicle and you have to port through a window or a windshield, that's really helpful. If you're laying on the ground outside your vehicle using your axle or engine block as cover and you're shooting on the ground and there's, you know, gravel and dirt and shit everywhere, yes, that's a good thing. Where they fail is the signature reduction. And if you guys have never actually shot one of those devices in low light conditions, you should absolutely give it a fucking shot, because the fireball that those things produce is crazy. It is really, really bad. It's worse than most muzzle breaks, honestly. I remember we took my brother out shooting at a buddy's property once, and a few of us had suppressors and he had a Warden, and the fireball was massive, at least on the first round. And you know, those of us who've been shooting for a while, you understand that the powder burn on that first shot is usually, there's usually quite a bit more burnt up powder if it's not the first time you're shooting that barrel or whatever. It only gets better after that first round burn off. But still, massive fireball, definitely something that is not going to be conducive to concealing your location and reducing your signature. Suppressors should definitely have it. Laser, you probably don't need the laser unless you're running night vision. Although you could, if you wanted to, there are some signaling things you could do with a vis laser. I don't think it's a very high priority if we're talking about, like, yeah, I mean, if it's a fighting carbine, I would say it's dependent, obviously, entirely on your access to night vision. Obviously, we have a great relationship with the folks over at Custom Night Vision, and highly recommend you guys go check them out and try and get into night vision. It is the superpower you can buy, and I think when paired with a good fighting carbine with the necessary training and practice to know how to employ those two things together, I mean, shit, you look at some of the reports and videos and stories, and I mean, yes, some of the TV and movie stuff that came afterwards, but how we handled the global war on terror those first several years, it was, we dominated based completely off of those two things. A fighting carbine and night vision paired with aiming lasers, PEC-15s, PEC-2s even, because I don't know if the PEC-15 was out yet. The PEC-2, which was, I think it's just a laser, but it's a pretty good laser from what I've seen. It's like the fucking Death Star, honestly. It's extremely effective. And with that, yes, more civilians have night vision than ever before. So I would say it should almost be a requirement if you're talking about near peer forces and trying to mitigate disparity of force between you and somebody else, if it were ever to come to that, right? Having an aiming laser is extremely helpful. Same thing with the illuminator. The white light should be on your rifle no matter what, because it is dark half the time. It always amazes me. I mean, like, some people build rifles or carbines, and it's built for a very specific purpose of shooting competitions. And if that's the case, then yes, have your gun be as light as possible if that's what you want. Understand it's going to increase probably the felt recoil. But if you're shooting competition, you probably have like a big muzzle brake on there. You're probably shooting really light ammo loads to help cut down on that recoil as well. You have a light trigger. It's a very different conversation than what we're having right here, where we're talking about the fighting carbine. Having a white light is essential. You have to be able to see what you're trying to shoot, because you have to be able to identify what your target is. And that's not just to say that, you know, you could come up on charges after whatever conflict you're in, if we were ever to engage in some kind of large-scale conflict in our country. Even just home defense, it would crush your soul if somebody, you know, if you were to shoot your own kid coming home late at night, sneaking back in, and you assumed it was somebody breaking in, so you saw a shadow in movement and you laid down five rounds, but you didn't have a white light on your rifle. And it's just the identification piece is every bit as important as learning how to pull the trigger, every bit as important in the decision-making process as knowing how to, you know, reload the rifle, how to shoulder it, all that. It's critical. And we live in 2025, they're more accessible rifle lights, functional, serviceable, decent quality rifle lights are more accessible now than they've ever been. Okay, so you can still get like the Streamlight HLX, the Cloud Rain 3.0, the Mod Light options out there. HRT makes their Mark III and Mark VI light heads that can go on some Arisaka bodies. There's Goon Beam, there's Z Bolt, there's all kinds of options out there for not just like decent lights, but really good rifle or carbine lights. They work with a variety of pressure pads. They can pair together with your laser so that you can train to know how to activate which one when you want to, whether that's two separate, you know, mod buttons, a dual pressure pad from Surefire. If you want to go push button on both units with no pressure pad, you have those options. And these lights are now bright enough, they can punch through photonic barriers. So if you're walking through your neighborhood and the street lights are on, you actually have lights out there that are powerful enough, they can punch through the light from that street light and you can see what's beyond. Excuse me, guys. Jesus. You can see what's beyond that street light. And there's absolutely no reason, especially because you can buy them used now too, as the next, the new hotness, right? As that hits the market, the cheaper, slightly less capable lights become accessible for around, you know, 60%, usually 60 to 70% of what people paid for them. Well, with numbers like that, it's really hard to justify not having one when you look at the ramifications and the potential impacts tied to not having a weapon light. And that's the same for a handgun, right? Certainly it's the same for a handgun. We're just not talking about handguns right now. You can argue handheld lights all day long, and I'm sure there's some kind of weird effed up way you could use a handheld while holding a rifle, but not really. Now, when you look at the amount of stability that you really should have to shoot out to 50 yards or 100 yards, and yeah, and there are lights, by the way, there are lights that can hit 100 yards and give you a good sight picture and a good identification. So to sit here and say that that's not realistic is also disingenuous. And then also the last thing I really think worth talking about, we talked about how available parts and things are and supplies and ammunition. That includes magazines, guys. Like, especially for the AR platform, magazines are everywhere if you choose the AR platform. But as somebody who is utilizing a fighting carbine, I would say in most instances, you want to have at least 6 to 8 magazines. There's really not an excuse for it. Again, there's companies out there doing it. Magpul, I think, is the gold standard. It's not the fanciest. It doesn't have metal feed ramp like, you know, the Lancer mags might. And it does some things maybe a little bit worse than some other options out there. But from a consistency standpoint and an accessibility standpoint, having good magazines is, you know, it's paramount for a fighting carbine. That's the other problem I will say with some of the other platforms like the FAL or AKs is that sourcing good magazines can be very difficult. I have a buddy who has it's got to be at least a 40-year-old, if not older, FAL we took out to the range. And he had 3 magazines and some 308 ammunition, and only one of those 3 magazines would actually reliably feed. And it's not the body of the magazine that's the problem. It's the spring and the follower. And if you don't know how to work on that platform to work around that issue, if it's even possible, I don't know. Like with an AR, you can just grab a new magazine because why not? They're like $8 to $12 at your local sporting goods store or your local Cabela's. But with this FAL, we didn't have that option. So we had one magazine. So we're sitting there, we're playing with the adjustable gas system on it. We're checking out the different ammunition because it's old ammo because the rifle's used. You're not going to be able, unless you already own all those magazines, because this is like an heirloom rifle handed down from, your uncle to your other, or your great uncle to your dad, to you or something. You're probably going to be pretty hard pressed to find that stuff. Even now, like it, when times are not of crisis, right. And you're trying to just source them and buy them, you're paying upwards, you know, of $30 a magazine, you know, double what you would for a regular Magpul magazine. And then shipping on top of that. And you don't even know if it's a surplus magazine, how reliable it's going to be. They could say that they tested it, but if testing it is one round to make sure that it just didn't jam, like that's not very conclusive testing, at least not in my opinion, of what those magazines are like. And also then you have to buy and find, you know, some kind of apparatus to carry and transport that ammo. So yes, a lot of chest rigs now, thanks to companies like TRX Arms, they will fit and work with FAL mags, SCAR mags, AK mags, the more common of the less common rifles, if that makes sense, right? But in general terms, your 5.56 magazine, polymer mags from Magpul are pretty much what you're looking at. So the civilian fighting carbine, it's definitely the modern day musket. It is the weapon of our age. I think that if you're serious about protecting your home and you're not at least entertaining the concept of owning one, I think you're doing yourself a disservice. I really do. 30 rounds is a lot to be able to dispatch multiple problems. When you consider that the 223 round or the 5.56 round is not a huge round, but it is a very effective round, despite what the media would tell you, it is not a, it's not going to blow, you know, football sized holes in anybody. But it does not have the stopping power of something like a 7.62. That's just science and a basic fact. But 30 rounds, you can deal with, you know, a couple guys with that. And then you have some reloads and things like that. I don't subscribe to the idea that nobody needs a rifle. I know that's not necessarily in some circles in law enforcement. I know that's not the most popular of opinions. I also really just don't give a shit. I know as American citizens, we won our own freedom from a tyrannical government across an ocean, fighting a war with quote unquote weapons of war that civilians by today's standard, apparently, according to some folks, we should never have. And if we allowed that methodology to rule the day then, or that ideology, I guess, to rule the day then, we never, our country would cease to exist. We wouldn't, there would be no United States of America. We'd still, you know, be taking a break for tea and crumpets, you know, and talking weird and shit and probably watching soccer, you know, or football, you know, I'm not big on that. I'm big on American football, not big on soccer. But civilians that are regulated and trained should have access to these kinds of weapons. Now I'll temper that and say, no, maybe temper is not the right word, but I will add to that, I guess, or add the caveat that it's your responsibility as, you know, there's two parts to this. There's civilian and carbine, right? Civilian carbine. As the civilian in that equation, it's your responsibility to know how to use the goddamn thing. And if you're listening to this and you're going, yeah, it's not that hard. When's the last time you went to the range with somebody who's never done it before? Because we've all seen movies. We've all seen movies. So we've seen John Wick. We've seen him do his, you know, speed reloads and shit like that with the, was the 416 or whatever 416 clone he had in the first movie. The second one, he had the, I think it was like the 13, 9-inch or 12.5-inch BCM rifle and stuff. And you watched him do the Magpul mag flip and shit like that. So we've all had some decent level of exposure to how this stuff is supposed to work. But then you get people out in the range, then they like are moving slower than molasses. There's uncertainty there. There's a lack of confidence. There's a lack of accuracy in the administrative skills, let alone the accuracy downrange on the target on the paper. So, again, I will say it is your responsibility as the civilian in the equation of civilian carbine to be prepared and be capable enough to carry out, like, you know, your remedial actions with malfunctions, and beyond, right? You need to be able to take care of that weapons platform, clean it, care for it, run it, shoot it. And I would say basic maintenance, right? That's kind of part of it. But then the carbine, we can control how much we want to do with that, whether that's, you know, a red dot, LPVO, some kind of magnified optic or glass, right? From any of the companies that are out there, right? And all of that stuff that goes with it. So I feel like a lot of the time, like I said, when we began here, I think we focused on the least important thing first, which is, what brand am I getting? What color is it? And does my Cerakote match my hardware that matches my optic? And then is it going to match my kit? And then we start looking at things like white lights and slings and optics. And all those things are certainly important. They're just not as important as, I think, learning how to shoot the rifle. And I'll say this, is I did it that way. 110%. I did it that way. I went out and I worried about buying an optic. And then I worried about getting a white light. And then I worried about a sling and then I worried about getting more magazines and stuff. And I even did it even worse than that, where I went cheap on everything. My first red dot was like a $25 piece of shit off of Amazon. Cause I just didn't have any money. Like, I just moved out of my parents' house. I was basically broke. I thought that Obama was going to ban AR-15s. So I bought one, and, you know, I probably wasted a couple $100s, if not a couple $1,000s on stuff that I probably shouldn't have bought for that particular rifle. I should have just saved up and gotten a decent Midwest Industry quad rail, or, you know, a real Midwest Industries free floated handguard that the local shop was able to put on for me. Definitely should have skipped the cheap ass light that I got for it, stuff like that, right? I didn't go with Magpul hardware right away, but Magpul's so accessible, that's pretty much a given. And if you go cheaper than that, then shame on you for being a complete fucking, you know, retard. I will say the last thing that I did with all of that, like, I had already had a new quad rail. I had rebarreled the thing. I was on like my second or third stock and my second or third pistol grip and my second, weapon light. And I'd got a, you know, muzzle device and a Surefire Warden and shit. And then after all of that, I took my first carbine class to learn how to really shoot the damn thing, how to approach shooting, even just how to understand the structure behind, here's like some basic ready up drills, here's how we go through this natural progression in the class to evaluate skill and to understand your holds and understand how to shoot and everything. It is the most ass backwards part of the whole goddamn thing, and everybody does it. You know, unless you have, military service where you learn how to do this shit the quote unquote the right way, because having spent time in the military doesn't guarantee that you get this right. So please don't listen to this and think that if you just go ask your buddy who's in the National Guard or was in the Navy, or is a, you know, Army Reserves or something like that, that just because they've used a rifle or handled a weapon before, that they're automatically going to be a subject matter expert and that their guidance is going to be gospel. I think that's a major miss when we're talking about rifles, because the stuff that you get in the military, you don't always need out here as a civilian. You know, God knows you don't, I mean, honestly, you can't have it if you don't want it, but you don't need an M203 as a civilian for the most part, at least not when you're getting your very first rifle set up. And you probably don't need a PEC 2 or a PEC 15, right? You just need a good gun that's going to run for you with a reliable sighting system and a white light and a sling. And from there, regardless what that looks like, what color it is, whatever, you can do a whole hell of a lot in terms of pursuing the goal of being more capable. But I mean, I know people now still, they'll go out and they'll come to the range days, right? They'll come to the range and they'll train with us at the range. And they'll run some drills with us and they pick up some tips here and some tricks there, right? But at the end of it all, they've still never taken an actual class from an actual instructor. Now, I acknowledge that classes are not the only way to get better. You can actually get pretty good without going to a class. And further, some classes shouldn't be. What I mean is that not everybody who wants to be an instructor or everybody who is an instructor should be. unfortunately, that's just the way she goes. Some people have very minimal military experience, and like I said a moment ago, you shouldn't take their word for gospel. And those are the same guys that turn around and go launch a training company, and they're going to teach you how to use the fighting carbine because they were a Marine. And yeah, every Marine's a rifleman. So if you had to pick a branch, I would say learning from a Marine is probably not the worst way to go about it. It's probably actually one of the better ones, but you could definitely do better. But I digress all this stuff, you guys. I really appreciate you hanging out with us, checking in. I haven't talked about something this focused in detail on something like a carbine, right? Fighting carbine and stuff. I haven't done something like this in a really long time. So it's kind of cool to be able to bounce back a little bit, go retro with it, if you will, and hit on a subject that is super applicable to what much of us are looking for, what much of us are trying to do with our training, building out rifles, adding to your rifle, things like that. I think it's a pretty relevant discussion, and certainly something that hasn't, while our options have changed, the core concept that we're all subject to as better prepared civilians, that has not changed in the many years, since I last talked about this, or even since I bought my very first AR. So I hope you guys took some good things out of it. If you have other questions, you want to get more into this, shoot me a DM or shoot us an email. Always happy to help you guys out or answer questions, things like that. And again, make sure if you made it this far, you hit that like button, that subscribe button, you give us a good rating on Spotify, because that stuff all helps with the algorithm somehow. I couldn't really explain it to you, because I'm not that kind of smart, and I don't know that anybody really understands the algorithm, even the people that wrote it. But at this point, I know that good ratings are good and bad ratings are bad. So if you guys enjoyed this, give us a thumbs up, like, subscribe, follow, all that good shit. And thank you so much for tuning in and supporting the Prepared Mindset this week. We will catch you guys on the next one. Everybody, stay warm and be safe out there. Until then, you guys get out there, work hard, train smarter, and be prepared.